Something from yesterday's class. Yes. All-pervading for one thing. All-knowing for another. But it's not referring to that. If you read it, the qualities that are explained, it's quite clear that it's a super soul. Although, perhaps an impersonalist would be able to see it in a different light. But yes, there was gyan, there was knowledge that the soul, the super soul, the soul is different from the body, completely different from his body. And based on that knowledge, one should do one's karma, one should do one's duty, but with intense affection, intense devotion to Krishna, as offerings to Krishna. So in that way, the proper use of jnana is to supply knowledge that supports the soul's bhakti. And the proper use of karma is to provide activities based on that jnana by which the soul can make offerings to Krishna. So in this way, by the instructions of Lord Vishnu, we saw clearly how jnana and karma support bhakti, and that is their actual purpose. Anyone remember anything else? Yes.
Vishnu is attracted by the qualities of his devotees.
Yes.
And he is
qualities and activities. Yes. He really was attracted by Prithu Maharaj. Yes. What else? But he is captivated by the bhakti and the qualities manifest. Yes, yes, the bhakti or Bhagavata Kinshana. Anything else from the class? And practically deal with the car of the body and practically deal with everything practical that's required. Not get overly theoretical. I'm not my car, so therefore I'll make believe it doesn't exist and I'll go out in the cold and the next day be extremely sick. Not too theoretical, not fully theoretical, but based on what's true in a philosophical and perhaps abstract way, but acting practically based on that. And they will love him. Yes? Was it love him or be happy, specifically said? You two are the carriers of this knowledge. Love him and be happy. Oh, good. Cool, very heavy. You become entangled in the very action that you're not forgiving. So, before, when the Lord said that he was pleased with Prithu Maharaj for his qualities and his actions, what did he say next? Yes. When did he say that I will give you whatever benediction you want? Was it then or a bit later? I think it was in text 16. He offered him any benediction, whatever he wanted, because the all-powerful Lord certainly has the potency, Lord Vishnu has the potency to award. In fact, we came across his name being the, maybe he wasn't here, but the giver of all benedictions. Did we come across that here? Or was it somewhere else I was reading? Perhaps somewhere else. The giver of all benedictions. He is the one who awards all benedictions. Even his sanction allows the demigods to make their benedictions. So Prithu Maharaj was confronted with this. Text 20. The Lord was just about to leave, but because he was so greatly inclined towards the behavior of Prithu, King Prithu, he did not depart. I think we read this yesterday. Seeing the behavior of Prithu Maharaj with his lotus eyes, he was detained because he is always the well-wisher of his devotees. Bhaktivatsalya, atma parjantavadanyata. He gives himself to his devotees. Prithu Maharaj had shown so much devotion and he had captivated the Lord. The original king, Maharaj Prithu, his eyes full of tears and his voice faltering and choked up, could neither see the Lord very distinctly nor speak to address the Lord in any way. So what was Prithu Maharaj? We have to remember that this isn't just a forearm form of the Lord right in front of him, but this is the Supreme Lord who possesses qualities that attract everyone, that filled Prithu Maharaj, who was a great devotee with great love. So his eyes became full of tears and his voice faltering and choked up. He could neither see the Lord nor very distinctly speak to address the Lord in any way. So he became, practically speaking, stunned in ecstasy. He simply embraced the Lord within his heart and remained standing in that way with folded hands. He did not move, he could not speak. And what was he doing? He was embracing the Lord within the heart. Do you know anyone else who also embraced the Lord within the heart when they first saw him? The queens of... Yes, when? Yeah, after sending their sons forward, then they embraced him within their heart. Who else?
The gopis?
The gopis? When? But the wives of the Brahmins did. Krishna actually entered their hearts through their eyes. And he embraced them. Right. It's true. So, Prithu Maharaj was enwrapped in ecstasy with the Lord in his heart. He was embracing him. 22. The Supreme Personality of Godhead stood with his lotus feet. This is what Prithu Maharaj saw, almost touching the ground while he rested the front of his hand on the raised shoulder of Garuda, the enemy of the snake. So this is the scene. This is what Prithu Maharaj was seeing. Prithu Maharaj, wiping the tears from his eyes, tried to look upon the Lord, but it appeared that the king was not fully satisfied by looking at him. Thus the king offered the following prayers. He wanted to do more than just look at him. And what was the Lord doing? Does anyone remember, without looking? What was the Lord doing? He was leaning on Garuda. He rested the front of his hand on the raised shoulders of Garuda. When the four Kumaras saw the Lord who had rushed there with his lotus feet, and he was also leaning upon Garuda. In one hand, he had a lotus flower, and he was the most casual, attractive of personalities. So he stood with his lotus feet almost touching the ground, resting upon Garuda. Now here's what Prabhupada in his purport says about that. In the second half of the purport, it's sort of an interesting bit of information. When he first appeared before Prithu Maharaj, he was not touching the ground of this earth. But when he was fully satisfied with the behavior and character of Prithu Maharaj, he immediately acted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, from Vaikuntha. Out of affection for Prithu Maharaj, he touched the earth, but he rested the front of his hand on the raised shoulder of Garuda, his carrier, as if to prevent himself from falling down, since the Lord is not accustomed to stand on earthly ground. As if, in other words, as if he needed some support from Garuda. But he was casually resting his hand upon Garuda, and he was touching the ground. Usually, the Lord, he touches the ground. His lotus feet were touching the ground, actually. It's especially in the land of Vrindavan, Krishna's lotus feet touched the ground. And therefore the dust of Vrindavan is especially sacred because of being touched by the lotus feet of the Lord. And when Akura first entered Vrindavan and saw this dust with the Lord's footprint upon it, what did he do? Yes, and not only did he offer obeisances, what else did he do? He rolled in the dust of Vrindavan, his body smearing his body with the dust that had touched the lotus feet of Krishna. Now, what does anyone know what Prabhupada says in Krishna book about that?
It's how we should enter Vrindavan.
Yes, in a very, very humble, affectionate way, understanding that this place is so special because everywhere it has been touched by the lotus feet of Krishna. And not only Krishna, but who else? Balaram. And not only Krishna and Balaram, but who else? And not only Krishna and Balaram and Srimati Radharani, but who else? Huh? Yes, and not only Krishna and Balaram, Lord Chaitanya and Srimati Radharani, but Lord Nityananda and Srila Prabhupada and the six Goswamis and the cows and huh? All including and huh? Yeah, it's two. And? Actually, when you said gopas and gopis, it includes the elder and the younger ones. And the deer. And all living entities in Vrindavan. And they were all fixed with incredible determination upon their loving service to Krishna. So therefore, that dust of Vrindavan is very, very dear to the devotees. It is said that there are three, I think in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there are three especially dear items in Vrindavan, or especially holy, powerful, and magnanimous items, the Giriraj Govardhan, the Yamuna, and the dust of Vrindavan. But in time, Giriraj Govardhan will sink and disappear. And in time, the Jamuna will dry up. And the last especially merciful item that will be left in Vrindavan will be the dust of Vrindavan. So Prithviraj, he began to offer prayers. He perceiving his fortunate position, Prithviraj could not fully look upon the Lord due to ecstasy, but still in a faltering voice, he began to offer prayers. Can we imagine what it was like for Prithviraj? Some of us may be able to, but he was fully enraptured. He was embracing the Lord within his heart. He was in ecstasy. His eyes were flooded with tears. He could barely speak due to his affection for Krishna. Because after all, bhakti means affectionate service, but affection for Krishna. And this is the goal. So we're learning from Prithviraj. He's just heard the Lord's instructions, which told him how to care for the citizens in correct consciousness. And that correct consciousness based on knowledge is bhakti. So the combination of the duty, doing one's duty based on transcendental knowledge and in the correct consciousness is this combination that we've mentioned of karma gyan and bhakti, or bhakti being the fulfillment of karma and gyan. So now he's going to speak. He is feeling fortunate that he is offering his prayers to the Lord. But it is also we who are fortunate because we get to hear what this great soul is desiring. He's been asked, "What benediction do you want from me? I'm pleased with you. What do you want from me?" And now he's going to speak. What does he want? 23. My dear Lord, you are the best of the demigods who can offer benedictions. Varan vibho twad varadesavarad buddha. My dear Supreme Lord, the highest of bestowers of benedictions, Varada Ishvarat. What to ask for? Why, therefore, should any learned person ask you for benedictions meant for living entities bewildered by the modes of nature? Because a materialistic person, what will he ask for? May my stock, the particular stock that I own in the stock market, go up. May everyone else's go down. So many benedictions that are available by the blessings of the three modes of material nature. What verse does Narada Muni say that decries asking for things? Tasyaiva hetu. Why ask for something that brahmaritam, that one can attain through wandering throughout the universe? It's like the story that Prabhupada told, and I've told probably quite a few times, of the lady who was carrying the wood on her head. And what happened? The wood fell off. And if you've ever seen the Brijbasis carrying the wood on their heads, you can carry it on your head, but you can't put it on your head. It takes two people. So she was all alone, and she began to pray to Krishna to come. And then because she didn't know what to do, and finally when Krishna came, "Yes, I am pleased with you. What benediction do you want?" "Oh, Lord, please help me put the wood on my head. I cannot do it by myself." You like that? So what is the use of asking the Lord? What is the use of going to a billionaire and asking for $5? What is the use of going to the Lord and ask for something that ordinary karma can award one? So he says, why therefore should any learning person ask you for benedictions meant for living entities bewildered by the modes of nature? Such benedictions are available automatically, even in the lives of living entities suffering in hellish condition. There is sense enjoyment for those in hell. My dear Lord, you can certainly bestow merging into your existence, but I do not wish to have such a benediction. So what two processes is he decrying here immediately? Yes, karma and jnana. Decrying karma and jnana, or the fruit of karma and jnana, independent of bhakti, because the Lord has just described the fruit of karma and jnana being their support of bhakti. But independent of bhakti, why would a wise person ask for these things? My dear Lord, he's being more explicit in the first line here. I therefore do not wish to have the benediction of merging into your existence, which is the fruit of jnana. A benediction in which there is no existence of the nectarian beverage of your lotus feet. So what is the fault of karma, of attaining the fruit of karma? Temporary, measurable, and why get that from the Lord when you can get that through the modes of material nature? And what is the fault, is he saying, of the fruit of jnana? There is, yes.
One times liberation, but impersonal liberation.
But what does he say is the fault?
Well,
What does he say is the fault? There is no existence, because there is no, all there is existence. So there is no separate existence. Existence of the nectarian beverage of your lotus feet. The dust of Vrindavan has been sanctified by the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna and his devotees. And without the lotus feet of the Lord, there is nothing worthwhile for the devotee. The nectarian beverage of your lotus feet. Now, what does he want? Quite amazing. I want the benediction of at least 1 million ears. For thus I may be able to hear about the glories of your lotus feet from the mouths of your pure devotees. So, if the happiness of Brahmananda is multiplied millions of times, Sridhar Swami has explained in Bhavarta Deepika, that doesn't equal one drop of the experience of bhava, which is the preliminary stage of love of God, which is prema ankur, the seed of prema. So we're just getting an idea. Karma is completely insignificant. Merging with the Supreme Lord is completely insignificant. But what is significant? The nectarian beverage of your lotus feet. And what does, how does he wish to experience this beverage? Through millions of ears. Because with millions of ears, there is a facility. Millions of ears gives a specific facility. And that facility is to hear a millionfold. 2 ears give a certain facility, but that facility is insufficient when one has such an incredible longing to hear about Krishna. So we're getting a glimpse of the longing of an exalted devotee, and thereby we're getting an indication of what we should be desiring. Because everything is based on desires. 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the soul situation in the material world is based on his desires, situated upon his desires, just as the reflection of the tree is situated upon water. So our situation everywhere is based on our desires. So what is worthwhile being desired? Prithu Maharaj is teaching us. I want the benediction of at least 1 million ears. For thus I may be able to hear about the glories of your lotus feet from the mouths of your pure devotees. Prabhupada's purport, we'll read the last paragraph. The word satam prasangam mama virya samvida. Where is that from? Teachings of Kapila Muni. Mean that that glorification of the Lord is potent when uttered from the mouth of a pure devotee, because that's the stipulation that he's giving. I want to hear those who love you glorify you, because that will have special potency that will enter my heart through my ears. The Lord has innumerable devotees all over the universe, and they have been glorifying the Lord since time immemorial, and for an unlimited time. But still they cannot completely finish enumerating the glories of the Lord. That means his glories are unlimited. Prithu Maharaj therefore wanted innumerable ears, as Rupa Goswami also desired to have millions of ears, and millions of tongues to chant and hear the glorification of the Lord. In other words, if our ears are always engaged in hearing the glorification of the Lord, there will be no scope for hearing Mayavad philosophy, which is doomed to spiritual progress. And there will be great scope for going upward in spiritual life, because the heart will be cleansed and spiritual desires will supplant the material desires within the heart, because cleaning the heart means cleaning the material attachments, removing material detachments. Does anyone here have a material attachment that they wish to remain? We're not going to go around the room, don't worry. But is there anything that it's worth it? Think of someone who already has it. Is there anything of the material world that's really worth it? What do you think, Parma? Nah. Well, anyway, unless we're fully convinced, or rather, unless the heart is completely cleansed, we have to actually come, Krishna is so kind, to experience whatever it is. So there has to come a point for a devotee where he says, well, Krishna, even though I may have so many material desires, I don't want anything. This is just sitting in my mind. I don't want these things. I beg you, please give me the shelter of your lotus feet. I don't want these things. Take them. Take everything. I only want your service. There has to be that sincere calling for the living from the living entity. Sincere, like a baby calling for his mother. I want you and you only. So it's really ultimately just a matter of sincerity. But extreme, intense, full sincerity. Not mixed, lukewarm sincerity. I want your feet, but I also want... A computer with... I only have 30 megabytes on my hard drive. Excuse me, gigabytes. I'm really behind times on my hard drive. And what is it? What is it? Unless we're pure, we all have our price. So Krishna will dangle so many things in front of us to see if we can be bought by the material energy or Maya. But if we always keep Krishna there, the light of Krishna will dissipate the darkness of ignorance. So how to keep the light of Krishna always there in our consciousness, always chant Hare Krishna, always. We need millions of ears, millions of tongues. Keep going, always. And especially, we should avoid Mayavad philosophy, which is doomed to spiritual progress. That's quite a heavy word in English, doom. Not detrimental, not bad for spiritual progress, but doom. What does doom mean? Huh? No hope. Huh? Damn, doomed. Yeah, that's a good one. What is doomed? Like your spiritual life may be flourishing or growing, and then it becomes doomed, it is killed. Your hope to develop your loving relationship with Krishna is destroyed. Does that make hearing Mayavad philosophy attractive? No. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that if anyone hears from a Mayavadi philosopher preaching about the activities of the Lord, not only Mayavad philosophy, even if such description, if it is a description from the Vedic literature, he is ultimately doomed. By hearing such Mayavad philosophy, one cannot come to the destination of spiritual perfection of life. So who desired millions of ears? Huh? Prithu Maharaj, yes, Rupa Goswami. This is the verse wherein Rupa Goswami states this from Chaitanya Charitamrita and from, which is included from the Vidagdha Madhava. But you have to listen, unless you have two ears for that one and the rest for this one. You have to use the 2 ears. This is Rupa Goswami. I do not know how much nectar. Now think of how our experience, or my experience, when I chant Hare Krishna, and this is what Rupa Goswami says. I do not know how much nectar of the two, how much nectar the two syllables Krishna have produced. I cannot calculate how much ecstasy, nectarian ecstasy, is within these two syllables. When the holy name of Krishna is chanted, it appears to dance within the mouth. We then desire many, many mouths. When that name enters the holes of the ears, we desire many millions of ears. And when the holy name dances in the courtyard of the heart, it conquers the activities of the mind, and therefore all the senses become inert. And so it seems like Srila Rupa Goswami gained some impetus from the words of Prithu Maharaj. And similarly, and he expanded the mood of Prithu Maharaj. And similarly, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur expands upon the mood of Rupa Goswami in one of his poems called Anuraga Vali, which is translated as the vine of loving feelings. Please, he says, give me millions of bodies and millions of mouths in each body. By your mercy, place millions of tongues in each mouth. O Lord, may your millions of transcendental qualities dance on these tongues. What is the use of a soul that does not have millions of bodies? What is the use of a body that does not have millions of mouths? What is the use of a mouth that does not have millions of tongues? And what is the use of a tongue that does not chant your millions of names? O Lord, may I perpetually have hundreds of bodies, and may each body have thousands of mouths. May each mouth have millions of tongues, and may each tongue chant millions of your holy names. O Madhav, whenever, wherever, whoever chants your names and pastimes, there may I with millions of ears eternally drink your nectar. May I have millions of ears and millions upon millions of tongues. Then, O Lord, I will eternally and happily hear and chant your pastimes. May I have millions of ears, millions of eyes, millions of hearts and minds, and millions of tongues, hearing about, seeing, and embracing the ocean of your handsomeness. I will drink its sweetness. May I have millions of ears, eyes, noses, tongues, and chests, so that I may continually taste the nectar of your handsomeness, your sweet sounds, your sweet fragrance, and your embrace. May I have millions of feet to go to your side. May I have millions of hands to serve you. May I have millions of intelligences to teach that service. O Lord, please grant me these boons. So compare these desires of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Rupa Goswami and Prithu Maharaj with the desires of a Mayavadi. Get rid of this body, get rid of this mind, get rid of this intelligence, make everything nothing. Why? So I don't have to experience the pain of this material existence any longer. And just see the great devotees and their desires. They know how to relish the existence of their soul in relationship with Krishna. I don't want to have the benediction of merging into your existence. A benediction in which there is no existence of the nectarian beverage of your lotus feet. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gained, when he took initiation from whom? Shileshwar Puri. He came back to him and said, "What kind of mantra have you given me? It's making me mad. Makes me roll on the ground and sing and cry out and yell like a madman. What is this mantra? Am I doing something wrong?" And Ishwar Puri said, "Oh, I'm so happy. It is having its proper effect." He wants to hear from pure devotees. Text 25, "My dear Lord, you are glorified by the selected verses uttered by great personalities. Such glorification of your lotus feet is just like saffron particles. When the transcendental vibration from the mouths of great devotees carries the aroma of the saffron dust of your lotus feet, the particles, the saffron dust from your lotus feet, your glory is carried by the words, by the consciousness of pure devotees, the forgetful," and then it comes out their mouths, "the forgetful living entity gradually remembers his eternal relationship with you." When he hears, and in that way he comes in contact through the mouth of pure devotees with the glories of the Lord, which are the saffron which decorates the Lord's lotus feet, which is picked up by the pure devotees. And therefore that affects that dust, that magic saffron dust placed in the heart of the hearer through coming down through the ears. Yad-yad diyatad urugayava bhavayanti tantan paniyeshe saranugrahaya. The white lotus of one's good fortune blossoms by that hearing. So by that aroma, by that saffron dust, the forgetful living entity gradually remembers his eternal relationship with you. Devotees thus gradually come to the right conclusion about the value of life. So we will say that non-devotees come to the wrong conclusion about the value of life. And what is the wrong conclusion that they come to? We just heard. He's rejected them. All the fruits of karma and jnana are the wrong are things that which he finds no value in. Because the fruits are Brahmananda, and that which is available through the modes of nature. So they come to the correct conclusion about that which is actually the value. Tarappa dhruva martadam. What is actually the value of life? And what is that thing that is actually valued? To fully awaken one's love for Sri Sri Radha Krishna and their service. "My dear Lord, I therefore do not need any other benediction but the opportunity to hear from the mouth of your pure devotees." So why is he asking for that benediction without looking? Why is he asking for millions of ears? Why is he asking for that benediction? And there, what will happen? What was it? What will happen? He remembers gradually his eternal relationship with you. His relationship is awakened. Now, Krishna bhule se jeev. The jiva has forgotten Krishna. Forgotten Krishna means we've forgotten our relationship with Krishna, and we conceive of ourselves when we have that feeling of existence, of who I am, what do we feel ourselves? We answer this question. What do I feel as myself? I'm something to do with the color of my skin, something to consider my gender, the country I'm born in. So many different upadis, so many different superimpositions, layers over who I am. But by coming in contact with the hearing, which carries from the voices of the pure devotees the saffron dust of the Lord's glories, then one remembers who one actually is, which is the only value of life. So that comes from hearing. And two ears are not sufficient, he says. Yeah? This is Prithu Maharaj's desire. He's the king. No wonder this soul has been empowered. Look at his consciousness, how exalted it is. Prabhupada's purport. Now here, we will get the opportunity to capture some saffron dust right now. It's an opportunity. It is explained in the previous verse that one has to hear glorification of the Lord from the mouth of a pure devotee. This is further explained here. The transcendental vibration from the mouth of a pure devotee is so powerful that it can revive the living entity's memory of his eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In our material existence, under the influence of Maya, illusory Maya, we have almost forgotten our eternal relationship with the Lord, exactly like a man sleeping very deeply who forgets his duties. In the Vedas, it is said that every one of us is sleeping under the influence of Maya. We must get up from this slumber and engage in the right service, for thus we can properly utilize the facility of this human form of life. As expressed in a song by Thakur Bhaktivinoda, Lord Chaitanya says, Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Gora Chandra Bole. Ya Kota Nidro Yayo Mayo Pisa Chira. What's the last word in that? Kole. What is kole? Lap. Sleeping on the lap of the witch, and she's bewitched us into thinking we are something that we're not. The Lord asks every sleeping living entity to get up and engage in devotional service so that his mission in this human form of life may be fulfilled. This awakening voice comes through the mouth of a pure devotee. A pure devotee always engages in the service of the Lord, taking shelter of his lotus feet, and therefore he has direct connection with the saffron mercy particles that are strewn over the lotus feet of the Lord. Although when a pure devotee speaks, the articulation of his voice may resemble the sound of this material sky, the voice is spiritually very powerful because it touches the particles of saffron dust on the lotus feet of the Lord. As soon as a sleeping living entity hears the powerful voice emanating from the mouth of a pure devotee, he immediately remembers his eternal relationship with the Lord, although up until that moment he had forgotten everything. For a conditioned soul, therefore, it is very important to hear from the mouth of a pure devotee who is fully surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord without any material desire, speculative knowledge, or contamination of the modes of material nature. Every one of us is kuyogi because we have engaged in the service of this material world, forgetting our eternal relationship with the Lord as his eternal loving servant. It is our duty to rise from the kuyoga platform to become suyogis, perfect mystics. The process of hearing from a pure devotee is recommended in all Vedic scriptures, especially by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One may stay in his position. It does not matter what it is. But if one hears from the mouth of a pure devotee, he gradually comes to understand to the understanding of his relationship with the Lord and thus engages in his loving service, and his life becomes completely perfect. What verse is paraphrased there? Gyane pre, at the beginning, Gyane Prayasam Urupastinamante Eva Jivanti Sam Mukritam Bhavadiya Vautan, and then Stinestita. Just stay in your place. But Shutigatam Tanovan Manobhya, but here. And then the unconquerable Lord, Jita Ajita, is conquered. This is wonderful. You can also find it in Ramananda Samvad. This is what Lord Chaitanya said yes to. When Ramananda Roy Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Roy, tell me something, what should one do? And he said, yeah, via external, external, external. When he came to this verse, he recited this verse, Mahaprabhu said yes. Just hearing bhakti. Hearing bhakti. We want to become devotees, but we don't want to hear. And what happens? Wither. Yes. That's. So therefore, Ian Mali Seichi Nitya Shravanadijal. We have to water the plant of our kripa. Nitya Seichi. Regularly, daily. Therefore, the process of hearing from the mouth of a pure devotee is very important for making progress in the line of spiritual advancement. Devotional service doesn't mean just work, 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 work. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Parasevanam, Archana Vandanam. The work just turns into karma, 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 unless we hear, 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 hear. My dear highly glorified Lord, if one in the association of pure devotees hears even once the glories of your activities, he does not, unless he is nothing but an animal, give up the association of devotees. For no intelligent person would be so careless as to leave their association. What facility does the association of devotees give? Hearing. And hearing specifically. So this is puts great weight on the purpose of Prabhupada's movement, of his International Society for Krishna Consciousness, ISKCON. Here's the main purpose practically. Facilitating hearing and chanting. Shravanam Kirtanam. The perfection of chanting and hearing about your glories was accepted even by the goddess of fortune, who desired to hear of your unlimited activities and transcendental glories. Prabhupada, the first line in his purport, says the association of devotees, Arya Sangama, is the most important factor in this world. Lava Matra Sarasange. The last paragraph of Prabhupada's purport. Maharaj Prithu points out that even the goddess of fortune, who is the constant companion of Lord Narayan, specifically wanted to hear about the Lord's glories. And for the association of gopis, who are pure devotees, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, underwent severe austerities. Lalanet Chattapo. Anyone know that verse? From the Nagapatnis. Bahaya Kamam Suchiram Dhritavrata. Performed with great firm vow, She performed austerities. The goddess of fortune. So to attain your lotus feet. So how is it that this serpent has gained that fortune just by being a nasty serpent? When the goddess of fortune wanted to perform austerities to do this. The impersonalist may ask why one should bother chanting the Hare Krishna mantra continually for so many years instead of stopping and trying for Kaivalya, liberation, or merging into the existence of the Lord. In answer, Maharaj Prithu maintains that the attraction of this chanting is so great that one cannot give up the process unless he is an animal. This is the case even if one comes in contact with this transcendental vibration by chance. Prithu Maharaj is very emphatic in this connection. Only an animal can give up the practice of chanting Hare Krishna. Those who are not animals but actually intelligent, advanced, human, civilized men cannot give up this practice of continually chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now, we'll read 27 and 28 together. Now, Prithu Maharaj says, these verses are, you'd have to say that he's being cute. Now I wish to engage in the service of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and to serve just like the goddess of fortune, who carries a lotus flower in her hand, because his lordship, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the reservoir of all transcendental qualities. So I want to hear about him, I want to wake up my service relationship with him, and then I want to serve him, as does the goddess of fortune, who has all opulences. And look what she desires. When a person has all opulences, you want to know what they desire. And what does she desire? To serve the lotus feet of the Lord. So what is more than, what is the greatest of opulence? This. But I am afraid that the goddess of fortune and I will quarrel because both of us would be attentively engaged in the same service. Serving the Lord's lotus feet. Prabhupada explains in the purport to this that he wasn't thinking of competing with her on the madhurya level, but this is just on the dasya level, on the servitorship level. My dear Lord of the universe, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is the mother of the universe. And yet I think that she may be angry with me because of my intruding upon her service and acting on that very platform to which she is so much attached. Yet I'm hopeful that even though there is some misunderstanding, I may be fighting with the goddess of fortune, and the goddess of fortune may even become angry. And she may even go away because of my wishing to serve your lotus feet. You will take my part. You will take my side, for you are very much inclined to the poor. You always magnify even insignificant service unto you. So even though he's saying this in such a unique, wonderful way, it's a very humble statement. Therefore, even though she becomes angry, I think there is no harm for you. There'll be no loss for you if she becomes angry and leaves you, because you are so self-sufficient that you can do without her. Mother Lakshmiji, the goddess of fortune, is well known for always massaging the lotus feet of the Lord Narayan. She is an ideal wife because she takes care of Lord Narayan in every detail. She takes care not only of his lotus feet, but of the household affairs of the Lord as well. She cooks nice food for him, fans him while he eats, smooths sandalwood pulp on his face, and sets his bed sitting place in the right order. In this way, she is always engaged in the service of the Lord, and there is hardly any opportunity for any other devotee to intrude upon his daily activities. Prithu Maharaj was therefore almost certain that his intrusion into the service of the goddess of fortune would irritate her and cause her to become angry with him. But why should Mother Lakshmi, the mother of the universe, be angry with an insignificant devotee like Prithu Maharaj? All this was not very likely. Yet Prithu Maharaj, just for his personal protection, appealed to the Lord to take his part. Prithu Maharaj was engaged in performing the ordinary Vedic ritual sacrifices according to karma kanda or fruitive activities. But the Lord, being so kind and magnanimous, was ready to award Prithu Maharaj the highest perfectional stage of life, namely devotional service. When a person performs Vedic rituals and sacrifices, he does so to elevate himself to the heavenly planets. No one can become qualified to go back home, back to Godhead, by means of such sacrifices. But the Lord is so kind that he accepts a little insignificant service, and therefore it is stated in the Vishnu Purana that by following the principles of Vanashrama Dharma, one can satisfy the Supreme Lord. When the Lord is so satisfied, the performer of sacrifices is elevated to the platform of devotional service. Prithu Maharaj therefore expected that his insignificant service to the Lord would be accepted by him as being greater than that of Lakshmiji. The goddess of fortune is called Chanchal, restless, because she is very restless and is always coming and going. So Prithu Maharaj indicated that even though she might go away out of anger, there would be no harm for Lord Vishnu because he is self-sufficient and could do anything and everything without the help of Lakshmiji. For example, when Gaubhadaksha Vishnu begot Lord Brahma from his navel, he did not take any help from Lakshmi, who was just sitting by him and massaging his lotus feet. Generally, if a son is to be begotten, the husband impregnates the wife, and in due course of time the son is born. But in the case of Lord Brahma's birth, Gaubhadaksha Vishnu did not impregnate Lakshmiji. Being self-sufficient, the Lord begot Brahma from his own navel. Therefore, Prithu Maharaj was confident that even if the goddess of fortune became angry with him, there would be no harm neither to the Lord nor to himself. 29. Great saintly persons who are always liberated take to your devotional service. Why? These two go together too, the next two. Great saintly persons who are always liberated. So even the liberated souls, what's the verse? Keep going. Kurvanti. Oh, how is it that Sukadeva Goswami, who was already a liberated soul, took to studying, the trouble of studying this great literature, the Srimad Bhagavatam, because all kinds of souls, Admaramas, even if they're self-satisfied, they love to hear the pastimes of the Lord. They take to your devotional service, great saintly persons who are always liberated. Why? Because only by devotional service can one be relieved from the illusions of material existence. Oh my Lord, there is no reason for the liberated souls to take to your lotus feet except that such souls are constantly thinking of your feet. In other words, they're enraptured by thinking of your lotus feet. Otherwise, they're already free from the material. They're tasting so much pleasure from that. That is the impetus for them. And not to gain release from the material world because they're already released from the material world. My dear Lord, what you have said to your unalloyed devotee is certainly very much bewildering. I'll give you whatever benediction you want. The allurements you offer in the Vedas are certainly not suitable for your pure devotees. People in general, bound by the sweet words of the Vedas, engage themselves again and again in fruitive activities, enamored by the results of their actions. So a pure devotee, what is he? He's demonstrated in these verses, in his prayers, I have no desire for either bhakti or mukti, anything produced out of karma and jnana. All I desire is the fruit of bhakti, which is attained by hearing about you from your pure devotees. My natural desire, my natural relationship with you, let it be awakened in that way. And he concludes text 31. in a wonderful way, which is because the Lord asked him, "What do you want? I will give you whatever you want." He said, "My Lord, due to your illusory energy, all living beings in this material world have forgotten their real constitutional position. And out of ignorance, they're always desirous of material happiness in the form of society, friendship, and love. Therefore, please do not ask me to take some material benefits from you. But as a father, not waiting for the son's demand, does everything for the benefit of the son, please bestow upon me whatever you think best for me." But he's already put in his request. "But give me what you think is best for me." Prabhupada's purport. It is the duty of the son to depend upon his father without asking anything from him. The good son has faith that the father knows best how to benefit him. Similarly, a pure devotee does not ask anything from the Lord for material benefit, nor does he ask anything for spiritual benefit. The pure devotee is fully surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Lord, and the Lord takes charge of him, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 1866, "Aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayami." The father knows the necessities of the son and supplies them. This occurs in so many times when the devotees pray to the Lord for benediction. They say, "You already know everything, but yet you have asked me, so I will explain." So he knows the necessities of the son and supplies them. And the Supreme Lord knows the necessities of the living entity and supplies them sumptuously. Therefore, the Ishupanishad states that everything in this material world is complete. Purnamidam. The difficulty is that due to forgetfulness, the living entities create unnecessary demands and entangle themselves in material activities. The result is there is no end to material activities. Life after life after life after life after life. Before us there are varieties of living entities, and everyone is entangled in transmigrations and activities. Our duty is simply to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead and let him take charge, for he knows what is good for us. Prithu Maharaj therefore tells the Lord that as the Supreme Father he may elect to bestow whatever he considers beneficial for Prithu Maharaj. That is the perfect position of the living entity. Therefore Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches us in his Shikastak, "Nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamani mama janmani janmani shade bhavatad bhakti ahaitaki tai." O Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor have I any desire to enjoy beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers. I only want your causeless devotional service in my life, birth after birth. The conclusion is that the pure devotee should not aspire after any material benefit from devotional service, nor should he be enamored by fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. He should always be engaged favorably in the service of the Lord. That is the highest perfection of life. So that is what was on Prithu Maharaj's mind. Now, interestingly, in the next chapter, this is chapter 20, and there's still more in chapter 20, but in the next chapter 21, Prithu Maharaj is going to explain. The Lord explained karma and jnana, their purpose and relationship to bhakti. In chapter 21, Prithu Maharaj is going to perform a sacrifice and instruct his citizens. And he, being a bhakta, such a great devotee, look at his desires, such a great devotee, what he's going to do is explain to the citizens how to achieve the platform of bhakti through performance of duties, karma. And then in the next chapter, the four Kumaras appear as predicted by the Lord. and they will explain the perfection of bhakti through jnana. Thank you very much. Any questions, comments? So what's your answer to that? What's the answer to what you've said?
What's the answer to that?
What's your answer to that? I think I know what you mean by figuratively. Yeah. Anyone else? Try that one? Yes. But he's asked, the question that's asked is, why is he willing to displease Lakshmi Devi for his own service? For us average devotees, okay, so there's the first answer, he's not an average devotee. And what great devotees do, they're beyond the motivations of average devotees, they're on a pure level. But we would normally consider that if someone has a service, let them do their service. So why what is he thinking? Oh no, yes.
Well, it seems like he's asking.
Yes, I
like
ask you. So he's expressing a desire to achieve service to the lotus feet of the Lord. But then a problem comes up. That Lakshmi Devi is one always doing that. So what happens if she becomes angry at me and doesn't want me to take her service? So I wouldn't quote it as say it as figurative, but it's a way of expressing his desire to attain the service of the Lord's lotus feet. But then the problem comes up that Lakshmi Devi has that service. So what happens if she becomes angry either at me or at you and goes away? And notice that he doesn't say, what happens if she becomes angry at me? Please protect me from her anger. But he says, but at least if she goes away, I have the confidence, first of all, that you'll take my side. You'll allow me. Please grant me this one thing that I'm allowed to serve your lotus feet. Even if Lakshmi Devi goes away, since you're, as Prabhu was pointing out, Patrikapu, that you're the... I'm so insignificant and she is so great. But please, you're famous for accepting the service out of your mercy of your insignificant devotee. So please accept. And I'm so confident that you will do this due to your compassion. And also, even if Lakshmi Devi goes away, you're complete in yourself. So it's more, it seems it's more figuratively and not quite a sentiment, but it's a way of expressing the intensity of his personal desire to attain the service of the Lord's lotus feet. That's what it seems. Anyone want to add anything? And then the Purvapaksha comes out. What is the problem with that? With doing that? Not today. Yes.
How do you tell?
You mean what do you tell him? How do you tell? How do you recognize the ones, the animals that...
How do you recognize an animal that's given up a chance
to die? It doesn't say... How do you recognize a person?
No, it just says that only an animal can give up a chance.
So how do you tell... How do you recognize a person, a devotee, who's yet somehow or another given up the chanting of... and now is leading an animalistic life? Is that what you're asking? So how do you tell which the differentiate between the animals who have given it up and the animals who haven't given it up? It's a deep question.
Yeah.
It's on a lighter note. Yes, Prajvihari has the answer.
No, it's another question.
Yeah.
Text 25.
Yes.
You
should give him prasadam. And never mind, are you an animal who's given up or are you an animal who's not given up? Let's be kind. Be kind. Let everyone hear. Okay, 25. So, what's the answer? What is the meaning? So, look at that sentence. If he didn't use the word gradually and two times, and what's the difference in meaning? By the use of the word gradually, and then he gradually makes progress. Yeah, that's what you realize. You may remember you that, yes, I'm Krishna's servant, but there's so much dirt covering the heart. There's so much dirt and desires and ignorance covering the heart, and passion covering the heart, that it takes constant cleansing and constant hearing. So perhaps the words gradually, they put emphasis on that you have to constantly do this. The cleansing and awakening process has to be done constantly. When you have a room that's or a mirror that's thickly covered with dirt, you can't walk in there and go like this and expect the whole cleansing job to be done. And in Kali Yuga, oh, we are so covered, and we are so selfish, and we are so self-absorbed, and so arrogant, and so undisciplined, and so contaminated, that we have to know that it's nitya sechi shravanadi jal, that the water of hearing has to be applied regularly and continuously. Okay. There are other parts of the process too. The hearing, on a lighter note, one of the parts of the process of purifying is taking Mahaprasadam. And I brought some Giriraj Gonatai Mahaprasadam today. So anyone who wants some, on a lighter note, we're going to have our very merciful Prabhu who loves to distribute mercy. Huh? Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Pritam Raj ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nice prayers, yes?